Welcome in everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built. And we are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find all the great coverage of the Big 12 over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends where you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, again, anywhere where you find podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter and Threads, Facebook, Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. I'd also like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our good friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They're actually at the Big 12 tournament next week, so you should check them out. But before that, you need to know they're a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best dressed fan regardless of the season, so check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all year long. With more than 30 schools to choose from, they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs, and you can get 15% off any non-sale item by using the code 101215 at checkout. That's TEN1215 at checkout. Shop today over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who has joined me in scheduling conflicts, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Man, busy, busy. Sorry this one is getting out to you folks late. Promise, we had notes updated earlier in the week. We were ready Tuesday. To go. We just couldn't get ourselves and our act together. Hopefully we'll make up with make up for it with a superlative show today, Gerald. It's good to hear your voice.
It's good to hear yours. Between work travel and family stuff and pets and all of that wildness, we finally got it. We made some time to do it, and it's here. Speaking of times, we've got a lot of incredible times at the NFL Combine, so we'll talk through that and our predictions for the NFL Draft. Down the 40, a lot of sports happening. Burnt orange lenses. Longhorns won some gold in the world. We'll obviously close the show out with some Godzillatron and some Bang the Drum. But we start in Indianapolis, actually, where I was for work this week with the NFL Scouting Combine, the annual Underwear Olympics that everyone cannot turn away from. And the big news out of that, really, if you stopped watching midday on Saturday, then the big news was Adonai Mitchell, right? Ran a 4.33, tested out of the gym, a 9.88 on the RAS. If you don't follow Math Bomb during the NFL Combine, you're doing it wrong. But Math Bomb does a relative athletic score, and Adonai Mitchell is just a couple of pounds. If he weighs in at like 210 at the pro day, he will end up probably at a 10.0 on a 10-point scale. And then, oh yeah, Xavier Worthy came up and managed to outdo him by setting the all-time 40-yard dash time. Was ran his first one as a 4.25, and there were some geniuses on Twitter like me that were saying, like, dude needed to run just a 4.2-something. He shouldn't run the second one, but X, being a competitor, came out and had an unofficial 4.22, which would have tied for the top time all-time. The official time when it came out actually had it at a 4.21, which was absolutely ridiculous. But Texas had a bunch of guys that tested well in various things, made some money for themselves. T-Sweat, Byron Murphy. Byron Murphy couldn't really do a whole lot to improve his draft stock, and somehow he did. T-Sweat came in at the right weight and ran really well. So, like, Kyle, when you think back through, what was the most, obviously outside of the record-breaking, like, what was the biggest story for you out of the Combine?
You know, I do think Texas has lacked in some top-end talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball in the decade prior to Sark kind of getting there. We had few and far between first-round picks. Bijan obviously broke that last year, and you look at some guys who made themselves, as Gerald said, some money on the offensive side of the ball just at the top with Xavier Worthy, and, you know, I don't think it should be I don't know if people hear what you said about that math score being as, you know, that RAS score being as high as it is for A.D. Mitchell in understanding. Basically, even if he doesn't improve at all, that's like a top five ever in the history since they've been measuring.
I want a perfect score, Kyle.
I get it. I'm just saying it's already unbelievable what he did. I mean, his broad jump was basically you just run a play where you put him on the 10-yard line and let him jump into the end zone. That was what he could do. I exaggerate only slightly, but, you know,
12 feet, 3 yards, 3 yard line.
yards versus feet. It was the joke. But yes, I, you know, he showed some incredible stuff. I think his body type, his big playability, he in a really, really crowded wide receiver class, right? This is as good as we've had in some time, even as football becomes more of a wide receiver game, and a wide receiver is a commodity first round pick for what running backs used to be in the past. This is a especially deep class, and you just saw the two people, and it's not just Texas Twitter. It is generally
like draft
football Twitter, NFL Twitter, draft Twitter, college football Twitter. The two things that everyone was talking about before Worthy ran, it was Mitchell turning heads, wowing scouts, wowing, you know, combine Knicks. He was the talk of the combine. And then obviously Worthy breaking the record becomes just, you know, the general. I think he was the header image on NFL.com's Twitter for a while. So, I mean, it is, everyone is talking about the two Texas wide receivers. So that's incredible, right? That is amazing. It kind of sucks for the third receiver in Jatavion Sanders, who had a very good combine as well. But those guys just tested out of the building. I think, you know, you're going to have a lot of offensive weapons go really early between those three guys. Keelan Robinson was good. He wanted better, and you could tell he was disappointed with his 4.42 40, which is great if you have a guy saying, hey, I could do better. And so watch out for pro day for some of these guys as well. But then on the defensive side, and Jordan Whittington as well, I think was fifth with his 18 reps on the bench. He's not a guy who just, you know, is going to wow you with those types of numbers, but man, GMs are going to love him in a room. He's going to make a team. He's going to stick around. Whether he gets drafted or not, we'll have to see. But looking at the defensive side of the ball, you knew the two big names, right? And all year had been Sweat and Murphy. Then when you think about how it projects at the next level, it's been Murphy who can play four downs and Sweat. And no offense to Devondre Sweat, but Murphy just keeps making money. I've seen picks putting him as a top 10 pick now at this point. And I don't think it's crazy is the Aaron Donald comparisons keep getting thrown around. I hate the pressure we're putting on the kid, but if there's anyone who loves it, it's Byron Murphy. So I love both of those guys. You know, just an incredible defense watching them in college. They're both going to go on and be, you know, stars and potentially superstars at the next level. And they, you know, did nothing to hurt their stock during this. Ryan Watts was a guy who was interesting to me. I had a lot of thoughts about how he would test. It was pretty clear that he was, you know, testing as a safety for most teams. And I think all in all, when you saw his size and how he could move, and again, especially as you move him back to safety, and it's not as much having to cover step for step receivers who run, you know, 4.240s. You know, it really projects well. I think he's big and rangy and lanky and showed enough and tested well in all the other physicals. His 40 wasn't bad, right? It was 4.5. But I think he's a guy who's intriguing, and I think, you know, will be an interesting watch of how high people are on him. But I think pretty high. There was my favorite tweet of the entire combine was a Sooner defensive back who tweeted out basically after Xavier Worthy ran, he's like, y'all were roasting me for being slow. No, I was just chasing a guy who runs a 4.240 down the sideline. So I appreciate that. Xavier Worthy getting the official times, making a lot of guys feel better about their own performance. So all in all, great, great, great showing for the Longhorns. It's great to be the talk of the town leaving the combine, and you know, it certainly was the case.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you I don't want to say breezed over Devondre Sweat, but like that was a man who had saw his, you know, early in the year he was talked about as one of the top defensive tackles in the country, potentially for the NFL draft, and has seen it dip a little bit because, again, some of his limited usability. But I think he probably earned himself some money in Indianapolis as well. And again, I think, you know, Keelan Robinson testing at wide receiver or being evaluated by some teams at wide receiver is an interesting development, and I think he is a pretty natural shift to that slot receiver role. Like, he's, you know, small, shifty, has that requisite skill set, obviously, as a running back. Very, I'm not saying he's at this quality, but very, like, almost Wes Welker-ish, like Wes Welker-esque, not to invoke somebody who went to Texas Tech, but I mean, it's an apt comparison, right? But I think, like, overall, as we think about this, we put it out there on Twitter, but it seems like Texas has at least two surefire first rounders in Byron Murphy and Adonai Mitchell. And it looks like, at least based on if Patrick Mahomes has anything to say about it, Xavier Worthy might be pick number 32 when push comes to shove. The Kansas City Chiefs all around, not just Charles Omenihu, who has a vested interest in the University of Texas, but the man himself, the Super Bowl MVP, Patrick Mahomes, caught his eye as well. And he was very much excited by that prospect. And I'm just saying, another smaller, fast receiver had a great time with Pat Mahomes in Kansas City, won Tyreek Hill. So I'm just saying, right? That's something to keep an eye on. And again, if Pat has his way, hopefully they need to draft some receivers. So hopefully that would be something great. So Kyle, we need to do a prediction. So Prize Picks, if you don't know about Prize Picks, where have you been? But they are the best legal way to play player props in states like California, Florida, Texas, and more. You play daily fantasy with it. Pick 2 to 5 players. You literally just pick over, under on their projection, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry. And all of our listeners, if you use the promo code Longhorn12, that's Longhorn12, you will get a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 to play on Prize Picks. Got a lot to choose from over there. Grab that app either in the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and go over there today. So our Prize Picks prediction for today, Kyle, I set the line at 2.5 first round picks. You want to click the over or under button on first round pick set at 2.5. So will Texas have 2 or 3 first round picks?
I'm an optimist, Gerald. I know you are as well. It's a little bit sad. I'm sitting here looking at the Raiders with the 13th pick and not just writing in Xavier Worthy 13th pick. gone are the days.
Fastest guy, let's get him.
Yes, gone are the days, unfortunately, or it would be a for sure, you know, guarantee. Like I said, Byron Murphy, there's no doubt, is a first round pick. I have a good friend who's a Chiefs fan. Shout out to Daniel. And before the draft, he was like, man, I wonder if Adonai Mitchell will fall to us. We can have that pick. And I texted him like the first event of the combine. I was like, I don't know if he's going to fall. And then it's with a 40 time happened. I was like, I don't think he's falling to y'all. Nope. I really, really legitimately think Adonai Mitchell, you know, could talk his way all the way. This is such a solid top three. He might end up being like the fourth wide receiver picked in the first, you know, if those three of those guys go in the top 10, he could be wherever that next receiver comes between 11 and 20, you know. So I think those guys are solid, which your floor is very fair. No one's really taking the under to mean less than 2. It's that third one. It's does Xavier Worthy get in? Does anyone else? Sure. But I think that's why I lean a little bit, just because I think the hype has been huge on Worthy. I love the opportunity it gave everyone to look at his route running. The media has been great. Like, he even tweeted, like, don't get distracted by that little 40 time. Watch the routes. And Texas Football put out, you know, many social media posts of him making plays, not just being a sprinter. Of course, the punt return where he set the top time in the country last year, touchdown, which called back, unfortunately. That is a speed play. But the whip route for the touchdown, some of the route running, right? Some of the things he can do as a receiver beyond just run a go route, which was not his strength with Quinn Ewers last year, or during his career, honestly, as those two paired up. The other things that he was able to do, I think that is what makes him a first-round pick. The speed puts him in the conversation, but that locks it down. So, yes, I'm taking the over. Xavier Worthy is the third. Take the over. 3 is the minimum. Who knows? Maybe someone else can sneak their way in, but I doubt it. But 3 is the number.
I tend to agree. I know there's not a lot of drama when we agree, but it seems like it will be, like, in order, like Murphy, Mitchell, and then Worthy. Like, Worthy is the trendy pick right now for a lot of mock drafts at 32, which makes a lot of sense. Like, he... You know, there are other wide receivers that are ranked higher than him, you know, bigger, you know, whatever, not faster, but bigger, stronger guys. But in an offense that values speed like that, and a guy who can run routes and is a very heady football player, right? The conversation around Xavier Worthy can quickly, like, tilt to very reductive of his skill set. He's not just a fast guy, right? When you compare him to the last guy who held that record, right? That guy didn't do much in the league. He was just super fast, right? Xavier Worthy's the kind of guy who can run routes. That's honestly a better, and like he said on Twitter, a better judge of his skill than the speed, right? The speed is just the cherry on top of the routes he could run and the blenders he could put people in. And so I do think it's probably Byron Murphy earlier. I think probably maybe top 15 for Byron Murphy is a lot of what I'm seeing, like top 15, top 18 kind of situation. I'm seeing Philly and and Buffalo a lot for Adonai Mitchell. And then anytime I've seen Xavier Worthy in the first round, it's been Kansas City. So like that to me, like I'll put him on the table. That's what, that would be what I would predict if Texas goes over. That's probably what it would end up being.
You know, let's speak it into existence. Why are teams waiting till the second round to get Tavondre Sweat and Jatavion Sanders? Go ahead and make it a clean five in the first round. No, I kid. That's ridiculous. But yes, I like, we're agreed. We don't have to have drama. We both prize picked that this will be an over, and that's okay. We can be aligned.
Here's the thing. Dolphins are projected to take a tight end, and if they don't take Brock Bowers in the first round, Jatavion Sanders right there in the second. But Texas's pro day is coming right around the corner 2 weeks from now on March 20th. So some of the guys that did not get to work out at the combine will be there. You also may see guys like JT Sanders, Keelan Robinson, try to improve their stock via additional 40-yard dashes or whatever it might be. Don't expect to see Xavier Worthy and Adonai Mitchell doing much at the pro day. But that brings us to the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. The men's basketball team goes 1-1 on the week, got a big win at home over Oklahoma State, 81-65, thanks to the Herculean efforts of Dylan Disu and the absolute lightning bug work of Chendall Weaver. Texas got some of that early against Baylor, had a double-digit lead, but blew the entire thing, had one lead change in that game, and that was the one where Baylor overtook them. Texas falls in that one 93-85 after having Baylor on the ropes. Baylor went on an 11-0 run to pull that off, and now Texas, it felt like they were a shoe-in for the NCAA tournament, and I still feel like they will likely make the tournament, but it shouldn't be squeaky bum time based upon where things were like a week ago.
Yeah, I mean, they win their last game, and I still think they're fine, but yeah, it would have been nice. I think that Baylor win would have really helped the seeding. The interesting thing is, if you carved a two-half game out of the second half of Oklahoma State and the first half of Baylor, Texas looked like a top two seed. You know, they looked phenomenal in each of those halves, right? Closing out the Oklahoma State game on that big 29-13 run, opening up with maybe their best half of basketball season against Baylor. Baylor, Jalen Bridges was absolute fire and kept it close. Good on them. And then in the second half, like I've seen some folks be a little upset about it, and it is absurd, right? Like the free throw disparity was up there, and that sucks, right? It sucks that in the second half, they were outscored 53-37, but they were outshot 73-43. The one people have focused in on is the free throw disparity of 21 of 27 for Baylor and 9 of 13 for Texas, so a plus 14 free throw disparity. But Texas settled for the three, and Baylor took it inside and got easy looks and got fouls. The refs were calling them.
And Texas plays really aggressively on defense. That's part of the design.
Yep. I think the bigger thing, and we talked about this a little bit at the end of the women's basketball game against Oklahoma, and I think it's the same thing here, right? Texas was out-rebound in this game, and especially when they had some players with foul trouble and some injuries take key players out. They're out-rebounded 19-7 after Dylan Disu went out, and with Brock Cunningham fouling out and IT Horton, who was their leading rebounder, even though not the tallest guy in the court, was their leading rebounder in this game. Once he got into foul trouble, Shedrick just really, although he's big, doesn't rebound. That really was the other reason that, you know, that they probably, you know, one of two or three reasons that they got beat in that one. And we have to talk about Disu. Shedrick stepped up for 14 points, but Dylan Disu leaving with a, you know, they're trying to downplay. Is it bad? How bad is it? You know, we'll see.
Looks pretty gnarly. I'm not going to lie.
Agreed. I think his parents went to the locker room is never a good sign. 68-62 when he goes out. I'm not saying him getting injured is the only reason. He was a game time decision with you know, stomach issues, stomach bug beforehand, gutted through it, literally, and then ends up getting hurt. It's just brutal. The guy is, you know, for what a magical, like, spark plug he's been at various times in the seasons for really the past year, right? At the end of last year in that tournament run, and then getting hurt and then coming back this year, right? That it's been such an incredibly difficult year for him. It seems like every time he really gets it going, you know, injuries sneak their head up. So I hate to see it. The stat that I saw that was, you know, been quoted is, you know, Texas is averaging the most, opponents are averaging the most free throw attempts in Big 12 play. Baylor had 42. In the football season, Longhorns were the most penalized team in big play, and opponents were the least penalized. And we've talked about football. It's crazy that that stat would carry over in basketball. I'm not ready to call it the giant conspiracy, but I do think if it comes down to it, you know, and it's a 50-50 game, it might be 51-49, especially at home against Baylor. Like, yeah, they may have gotten a couple extra calls. Yeah, they mentioned Brock Cunningham now gets reputation, you know, foul calls. That's tough. But, you know, you're right, Gerald. I think you hit the nail on the head. That's the way Texas plays, right? They play aggressively. They're going to get more. They don't drive to the paint. They're not going to get the calls. I agree more with the football calls being puzzling than the basketball disparity, but the kicker on that tweet was that the odds of all three of those things happening are 1 in 2,744. But I will let you do with that what you will. I think the one thing to look at that game is a positive in Baylor, and again, it's mainly at the first half, but was just how good Max Asemus could be when it had to be his team. And I don't want to say we're Oral Roberts, but if it's in the tournament and we have to, you know, lean on a guy, it's nice to have a guy like Max Asemus.
Who's done it before, right? That was him at Oral Roberts, right? And again, Texas doesn't want to be Oral Roberts, but, you know, he, in the game, became the fourth player to hit 500 threes in NCAA history, moved to eighth all-time in scoring. Texas played 11 ranked games, 8 on the road or neutral, 3 home games, 1-2 in those, though, so not necessarily anything to hang your hat on. Texas gets to close out the regular season hosting OU on Sunday, so that could do some stuff for seeding for both teams and their prospects for the Big 12 tournament. On the ladies' side, they finish the regular season with a big win on senior night over BYU, 71-46. Absolute incredible performance from the ladies, complete domination of the Cougs, and a great showing from fans who showed out in numbers to get some donations.
Yeah, they honored Shaylee Gonzalez, who got to play her former team, which is pretty cool how that worked out. And then Khadijah Faye. Shaylee hit, I think, one of 2 3-pointers on the game, but played great on defense, 5 assists, 4 rebounds, 3 steals, 1 block. But the thing that you said, Gerald, is the correct celebration of the fans. They raised $167,000 for the neighborhood Longhorns program, with over 10,000, I think 10,364 was the official attendance number. So just awesome. It was basically the usual script. They won the turnover battle 22-9, second chance points 21-7. When they do those things, they're hard to beat. And when they do this thing, Maddie Booker happens to be very good at basketball. When they do that, they win a lot of games as well. 20 points, 5 assists. I'm seeing her name pop up more and more for end of year awards. Just real quick, she was named the Big 12 Freshman of the Year, season ending award, as well as co-player of the year, the first ever freshman to be Big 12 player of the year. She's moved up to, I think, 3rd in assists, 6th in points for a UT freshman, her 5th Big 12 player freshman of the week. Just awards flowing in, and I think, you know, rightfully so.
We are watching an all-timer. I will go ahead and say it. We're watching an all-timer, and we have at least a couple of more years of her all-timiness on campus. So Texas finished the season in spite of all of the turbulence and the frustration and the injuries, finishes the season 27-4. All 4 of those losses coming in conference play. Looks like they are going to probably end up as a 2 seed in the NCAA tournament. They've still got the Big 12 tournament on the way, so that could potentially do some stuff for seeding, but usually doesn't do a whole lot for it. But, you know, it's hard to keep out a conference tournament champion, and there's a long conversation out. Deanna Gatson got the 6th person of the year, Aaliyah Moore on the 2nd team all conference. Holly and Shaylee both got honorable mentions for that. So they are the number 2 seed in the Big 12 championship this weekend. They've got the winner of Kansas and BYU, teams they've beaten already this year. So they get a bye. Enjoy the bye, ladies. Congratulations. Bring home another trophy, because the swimming, the pool Longhorns, the Aqua Horns, let's go with that one, brought home on the men's and the ladies' side, number 2 and 9, respectively. Trophies, Big 12 championships, titles 5 and 6 on the year, 42 titles in the past 4 years. Eddie Reese got his 45th consecutive in his final chance. Carol Capitani's 12th in her, not final attempt, but 12 in a row for her, absolutely incredible. incredible. The women won 21 of 22 events, while the men had a pedestrian 19 of 22.
Yeah. Big 12 meet records. This one, the 100 breasts from Lydia Jacoby, 205 for Kelly Pash, 200 free relay with Grace Cooper, Ava Long, Emma Strickland, and again, Kelly Pash. Team diving with Haley Hernandez, Bridget O'Neill, and Jordan Skicken. And then on the men's, Kelly Pash was the swimmer of the meet, Haley Hernandez, diver of the meet, newcomer of the meet, Aaron Gimel. On the men's side, out of those 19 or 22, they had a team diving set a Big 12 meet record. Tanner Broughton, Noah Dupree, Nick Harris. The swimmer of the meet was Will Mogdon, diver of the meet, Noah Duperry, and swimmer newcomer of the meet, Nate German Perez, and then diver of the meet newcomer was aforementioned Tanner Braun. So not a foregone conclusion, but I think we all assumed it was kind of a how close can they get to sweeping every event. The Big 12 has definitely gotten stronger with some of their additions, U of H for instance, in swimming, but it will be a battle in the SEC, especially replacing Eddie Reese. It will be interesting next year. Swimming will legitimately be interesting to watch during the regular season with no Eddie replacing him, and then going to one of the toughest conferences in that sport next season, but they still have the national competitions to go.
Texas Tech also earned Diver of the Meet awards for their performance at the Meet Judging National Championship earlier in the year. On the diamond, the number two ladies softball, not ladies softball, just number two softball team goes perfect on the week, 5-0, outscoring opponents 45-2, shut out Texas State, and then go two run rules on Friday in the tournament. Northwestern State and Tarleton, a combined 27-2 in those games, 13-0 in 5 over Hofstra. Played Hofstra again on Sunday, 4-0, and then Penn State 7-1. Absolute throttling from the ladies, who crept up to number one in one poll because OU lost a game, which I think is ridiculous.
Yeah, OU had a 71, I believe, game win streak snapped by ULA. Just leave it there, no law. Many are saying they still should be number one. That's fair. I get it. Texas looks amazing, though. They're both number one, honestly. And that 1 month from now in Austin, I think it's the first week of April, the Red River softball series will be absolutely, absolutely intense. Will be crazy to watch. Texas got their seventh quad one win, which moved them up to number four in the RPI over Penn State. Katie Stewart in that one became the first player to hit the new apartment in left field. I love the home run targets, right? In the dish walk, it's clearing the batter's eye, the green monster that Ivan Melendez was famous for. On the women's side, now they have a new target. If you go left field, can you get it 287-ish feet? Hers was 289 in the air and catch the new building, which will be fun for residents who are on the ground or second floor as hitters start aiming for that. Apparently, someone has done it in practice, but this was the first player in the game. So big ups to freshman Katie Stewart. Freshman Tegan Cavan proves to continue to be such a coup that Texas grabbed her out of Iowa, and again shows the power of what Mike White can do with his national recruiting. She legitimately is unbelievable, right? Had that midweek against a really, really good Texas State team, shut them out with a complete game shutout. It has just been absolutely electric. Had a 25 consecutive scoreless inning streak snap by giving up one run to Penn State.
But how again, dare she?
Yeah, exactly. It was her first run in six appearance at Red McComb. So she's just been lights out at home. She's been lights out on the road. She's been lights out against top competition, against ranked opponents. Adding her into a already stacked pitching mix really, I think, is a big part of how they took this step up. The other part is the bats are just continuing to be wildfire. Like you said, at 45-2 and 5-0, but then, that was when we had the show notes ready for Tuesday. We added underneath it, they won 8-1 over UTA, welcoming back Camilla Corona. Glad to see her get a standing ovation. But, the runs just keep adding up, and this team just, they look as good as OU is and as deserved as it is theirs to lose the number one spot. This Texas softball team looks the part. They look like the number one team. They in extra innings lost a heartbreaker to the best pitcher in the country with Stanford, and otherwise they're unblemished and not unchallenged, but pretty unchallenged in most of their matches. So I really can't have that one circled against OU in a month circled enough. Not that, to mention that they have Oklahoma State right before that, who's very, very good. But it's really right now this year, till someone proves otherwise, is Texas and OU.
So my one question is, if I'm a resident at that apartment and I get hit by a home run, do I get something? Do I get like a month's rent or something? It's just a question. Anywho, Texas has U of H over the weekend open Big 12 play after, again, Kyle mentioned that dismantling of UTA this week, 8-1 in the midweek matchup. Baseball. We could just skip baseball if you want to, Kyle. terrible weekend, terrible midweek, a really brutal stretch following. Anyway, Texas went 0-for in Houston, yeah. Blew a couple of leads in that. Texas State and Vandy, double-digit leads, or like nearly double-digit leads, right? And then they got absolutely housed by A&M. There's no two ways to say it, right? And then they've got Texas Tech coming up this weekend. Like, it is scary hours, I think, maybe for the baseball team. I am just concerned. And again, we said this, we said the same thing early in the year last year, but it is just, it is concernicus, let's say.
Yeah, it was my birthday weekend. I just couldn't make it out. I had friends and invites even to go, and I'm glad I missed the game in Houston. The game's plural in Houston. I had a buddy who's at the Texas State UT game. That was the best of the bunch. At least it was a fun wild game, right? 11-10 with a bunch of lead changes all the way through. Like, that was actually a good fun baseball game. If that was their only loss, you know, it's fine. Even if they salvaged the weekend against Vandy like it looked like they were about to, the way they went down to LSU was tough. LSU's a good team. They struck out 20 times. They just couldn't hit their aces, and that's tough. But okay, you lose that one. You lose Texas State in some weird heartbreaker. Texas State has a vendetta in softball and baseball and sports against Texas.
They're just a solid good team.
I was going to say, they're getting pretty good. Like, you legitimately in both of those sports, like, they're pretty good. We have, you know, friend Adam Witek, who played shortstop back at Texas State in the day, and he told me it's huge for those guys when they get to play, you know, drive down the road, or especially when Longhorns come down the street to play at their house. Like, it's a matter of pride for that team. And so as they're getting better, right, that becomes an even more and more and more dangerous midweek game. This one was a weekend game, and you know, the fact that the guy hit the game-winning home run while blowing a bubble is an all-time college baseball moment. I'm cool with it. Like, those first two games, I'm not that upset about. But then Vandy, when you're up 14-3 and then you lose 14-11, like, that's tough, man. Like, it's just brutal. The you know, the Tanner Witt injury continues to loom large. Like, the pitching staff just doesn't look like they have a lot of guys that Pierce can trust is sharp as they started, you know, in the bullpen. It's continuing to be an issue. The starters getting ran out. Like, good on LSU having a game plan, by the way. I do want to talk about that. They chased LeBaron Johnson 3 innings. You say, oh no, that's not great. He had 6 Ks in 3 innings. He did give up 4 hits, but he threw 91 pitches to 16 batters in 3 innings. That's nuts. That's 7 innings worth of work. They were averaging almost 6 pitches in a bat. They had a strategy that said, we know LeBaron Johnson is a great pitcher. We need to be patient. We need to run up his pitch count, because we feel like if we get past him, we can get into this Texas team, and they were correct. And that sucks. It sucks that teams know that. And so I worry a little bit about our bullpen, about our depth, about, you know, how we bounce back from this. I'm going to give Pierce the benefit of the doubt. He's had some turnarounds and some Cinderella moments and pulled some rabbits out of some hats. But we won't talk about the midweek game. That's brutal and it sucks. Midweek games, I guess, don't count, especially when we lose them. Yeah, I mean, a really, really tough, really low stretch against what we said was great opponents. But the way it played out, more than the results even, the way it played out, pretty hard to swallow.
Yeah, and I mean, I think I'm not on the Fire Pierce bandwagon like a lot of people are, but the bus is warming up, I think, for a lot of folks. And I think there is, I mean, when the pitching struggles and your head coach makes himself the pitching coach, like, there's something to be said there, right? Now, again, Texas, like you mentioned, has had turnarounds. They had a turnaround last year and things spun up for them. So it's a long season, but the Big 12 is a tough, tough baseball conference. And again, they open up with Texas Tech, who's going to want to get some measure of revenge because Texas has slapped them in everything meaningful up until this point this year. So if they can get this win, they would absolutely love it. But you know what? We'll see how that works out. over the weekend. On the hard surface, number 6 and number 10 men's and women's tennis were in action in conference play. The men narrowly fall to number 2, TCU 4-3 in Fort Worth, while the ladies got a slim victory 4-3 over number 15, Oklahoma, in Austin. Both exciting weekend events.
Yeah, the men pushed deep into the third set of the final single match, but just couldn't close, right? It was big for Micah Braswell to get a win over number 8. GAB got a win over number 21. That's a really good TCU team, as much as I hate to admit it. It came down to the number 1 singles, though, where Elliott Spaziri, you know, that's, you feel pretty good about that. But just going deep against Jake Fearney, who they've had a good rivalry over the years. It was Spaziri's to lose. He had match point during the second set tiebreaker at 6-5. To his credit, it was fended off, and he just, you know, basically played out in the third. It was tough. Hate it for Spaziri, but I think Braswell passed him. He's now number 2. So Texas had 2 number ones in the same season. Pretty crazy, but a good showing. They're going to have something to prove. I just hope, you know, this losing pisses them off, and they channel it into a run through Big 12 and again through the postseason. On the women's side, though, to get that OU win is always great. You know, I really like to see, they are the opposite of Texas, where they have some people creeping up the rankings because they really were just a deep team that's been good. Now it looks like you're starting to see them beat some really good talent, and maybe they're both a deep and really talented at the top team. So, you know, two different stories to get there, women creeping up, men sliding down. But at the end of the year, if they're both top 10 Texas, I'm feeling good about the chances of either one. But again, especially, I need men's tennis. Bring me some silverware with this group of world beaters.
Yeah, I mean, there's an opportunity there for them. Again, TCU, that's a rivalry. That's TCU loves beating Texas, and I think that rivalry played out that way. The men come back home to face number 1 Ohio State on Sunday, while the ladies will host West Virginia on Friday. Finally, in the country club, number 7 women's golf at the Hootie, aka the Darius Rucker Invitational, our favorite tournament to talk about every year. 8 of the top 15 teams in the country, 8 of the top 12, excuse me, teams in the country, 15 of the top 40 are on site in South Carolina. The ladies ended up finishing 8th in that one. And again, tough crowd, tough outing, and there was a lot of tough competition for them there.
Absolutely. I do love that the Darius Rucker Invitational of all places, you quoted how many top 40 there were, and that just feels like a guy who plays the pop charts. But yes, this one, the you know, up and down with the team, but one person who wasn't up and down is Farrah O'Keefe, who just looks to be on another level. A lot of drama to get to her co-medalist award in the final day. Shot really well on the first day, pretty, you know, still very solid the second day, and then third day just aces a 50-foot putt on the 18th green to get 5 under to get her to the co-medalist spot. It was pretty awesome, pretty dramatic. Like, anytime you house a 50-footer for anything, but watching her team celebrate her knowing that it got her the medal, just incredible. Again, this is freshman Farrah O'Keefe with her third top 5 finish already in her very, very young career. She looks like she's going to be special. All right, Gerald, now let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. Let's start with the track. This was a great weekend. The track world championships took place over in the UK, I believe, and it was pretty, this is the indoor world championships, it was pretty eventful for Longhorns, right? Not just Team USA, who obviously fared well, and there were some great performances, but specifically Longhorns kind of ascending in some of the key sports that you want to watch. It completed a career for Ryan Krauser, who had never won the indoor world championship, the only thing in his career he hadn't won. So seeing him win the world championship in the shot put was amazing. Tara Davis got the long jump championship, took home the gold. She had won some
breaking performance, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely it was. And she had won silver. She had been close. And I heard Trey Hardy, a Longhorn legend and track legend, talk about it. He's like, this is really bad for everyone else in the world. Like, she is peaking and climbing and getting better, and basically the fact that at this age, at this point before the Olympics, she has secured kind of the best jumper and is just getting better. Like, it's hers to lose and she's not going anywhere, which is pretty cool to hear him say that. And then finally, our gal running for the Islands, after running for the Longhorns for a couple years, Julian Alfred, also went in and won the 60 meter world, championship, the gold medal there. So great to see Longhorns just dominating, like they did it on the 40 acres and, you know, for two of those three for Coach Flo in winning, all kinds of awards, in Burnt Orange, they're now doing it for their respective countries.
St. Lucia for Julian Alfred, if you were curious. St. Lucia.
I'll throw a couple quick hitters in here, Gerald. The disrespect I felt as I read this was wild. Now, I don't actually know what's behind it. If some other teams have leveled up, I know Texas lost a lot of talent, but rowing was ranked this week number 4 in the preseason Pocock CRCA coaches poll. Now, it's great that they've been top 4 at the last 6 national championship regattas. So top 4 was like as low as they could go. But I mean, if they needed a chip on their shoulder, I don't know how weight distribution goes in the boat carrying chips on specific shoulders. But if they needed it, if Coach O'Neill needed that motivation, this just feels like maybe a fire was lit.
I mean, based on how last year ended, right? It's kind of, I mean, it's, if there was a disastrous finish last year, it was the way that the NCAAs closed for the rowing team. So, I mean, maybe they needed some inspiration. Maybe they needed some. I mean, it's probably not something they need because this is a team full of killers. But
those dang birds.
Bring home the gold, please.
Avenge those dang birds. Cool news, especially for men of our fans, I should say, of our certain vintage, Gerald. We're not young. Longhorn legends, defensive end Corey Redding and running back Cedric Benson will be inducted. It was announced in the Texas High School Football Hall of Fame. How old does that make you feel?
Very, very old. Because you and I watched Cedric Benson, or at least I did, live in college, and I was aware of him in high school. So yeah, I'm pretty old. Rest in peace, Ced. You are. There was a Twitter thing happening yesterday, and people were like discounting Cedric Benson as like an all-timer, and I had to put my phone away because I got angry. like Cedric Benson is one of the greatest running backs to ever grace college football. Period.
Just bit of news. I missed it in the tennis section. Zane Lova, our friend of the pod, was named Big 12 Women's Tennis Player of the Week. Want to give her her shout-outs there. And then finally, Gerald, how do you feel? We knew it was coming. We're in love with the Moody and what it's doing, but Frank Irwin Center coming down.
I have a lot of memories in the Irwin Center. But I think it needed to happen for a lot of forward progress. This isn't like progress for progress sake of a lot of what's happening in Austin. This is kind of pointed and intentional progress. And I think I am okay with that. It's still obviously sad to see it go, but the things that is going to open up and make available, I think are worth the emotional turmoil.
Agree. It's a net positive, man. I mean, I graduated there. We've talked about it before. It's tough, but seeing it come down actually somehow felt a little sad. Okay. More sad than I thought. But all right, Gerald, that's it. Let's take it home with our final couple segments here. Keeping it quick. Godzilla Tron. What have you been watching on your giant screen?
Yeah, so a very giant screen. This past weekend, my wife and I and some friends went and saw Dune Part 2, and it was awesome. It was incredible, and it is the first time I academically know that Timothée Chalamet is a talented actor. Enough people who I trust and believe say he is a talented actor, but he never really did anything for me. And I guess it just took him doing a movie that I actually cared about to see it. So big fan of the Chalamet. Honestly, Javier Bardem was it's hard to call him a breakout star because he's been a star since we were in college. But like seeing him and Josh Brolin pitted against each other as dramatic foils once again really made my heart sing. And I've been thinking about Javier Bardem's performance in that movie for like a week now. It was incredible. And there were just like the emotion that he brought out and the core themes of that movie really hang on his character in a lot of ways. It's about like the power of fanaticism and the power of religious dogma in controlling people, and he is very emblematic of that. And so Javier Bardem absolutely crushed it. There's a scene where he and Timothy Chalamet are just acting the hell out of it against each other, and I loved it. It was great. We saw it in like the big screen format. So if you are a person that's into that kind of thing and didn't go see Dune, you probably didn't because it made a ton of money. But if you didn't see it, go check it out on a big screen because it is worth it.
Very cool. You like Dune 2 more than Dune 1?
Very much so. I liked the original Dune, like the one that they put out on HBO when COVID was happening. There were people that did not like it because it was very slow. But it was all the world building stuff that happens in your epic sci-fi, in your epic fantasy. And so that was like 2 hours of that, which I actually like that stuff. That stuff's interesting to me.
Sure, sure.
And so they got to...
You're the target for
that. I'm the target for that. And so they got to do... They separating that out allowed them to do a lot of the more action heavy stuff in the second one. And the set pieces are beautiful. Denis Villeneuve is like... Like the guy can do scale and massive set pieces like nobody else going right now. Like he's been responsible for like my favorite sci-fi film the last like 10 years. Arrival, Blade Runner 2049, and now Dune Part 2. All of those are just incredible.
Unbelievable director and singular viewpoint. You can just like see his movies and know it's him. But anyways, it's known I'm going the complete opposite direction that I am a fan and a lover of rom-coms. I often joke with my wife that only during COVID would I watch her shows, but I don't mind it. Sometimes I'll watch The Trash with her. I watch Love is Blind in those. And, you know, she likes it, so I put on. It's fine. It doesn't bother me nearly as much as I pretend it does. But she wanted to watch a show on Netflix called One Day, which I later found out is based on a novel and then was a movie in the early 2010s, I think. But I only encountered and digested it through the TV form, which I read a little bit, and folks seem to think that the space was what they did with it was well, right? It was well earned that they... they're not long episodes, like 25 minute episodes, but there are like 13 of them, I think.
Oh, wow. That's a big one.
Yeah. But because they're so short, you know, I kind of almost prefer to power through three episodes in 90 minutes versus, you know what I mean? You feel like you've accomplished more. Or even like I went through two, I have an hour and I watched two episodes instead of one. You know what I mean? So somehow there's, I don't know. It's all, it's like something being $9.99 being cheaper than $10.00.
Yep.
It's all in your brain. But anyways, format aside, it's a love story. And it's like an unconventional love story about two people. One's the posh boy at a British boarding school, and the other's like a hard scrabble, brilliant, girl who's top of her class. They meet on the last day of their uni, like, graduation party basically on the whole campus in Edinburgh, and then go their separate ways. And it's one day, so it takes this like pick a day in time, tells it forward for 20 years, and what I won't spoil anything, that day becomes very relevant, and there's a reason once you get to the last episode of why it's that day. I'll just say this, it's a cute and charming love story for like the first 8 or 9 episodes. Will they, won't they? You know they will. It's told well. They build up these great characters. That both actors are young and relatively unknown, but this should launch both of them to larger careers, I would think. But I didn't know this, and I will not give it away for anyone else, just to say that there is a turn towards the end, and it is heartbreaking. And like both my wife and I, my wife is just bawling, sobbing, and I was absolutely tear-stained cheeks. It's heavy, and it's you know, emotional. But it was worth it. I think it was a great watch, and it stayed with me for a while, even though, again, it's not like my traditional go-to. I enjoyed it. So if any of you are interested in that, if any of you have spouses who are encouraging you to watch it, go for it. Sit down, watch it. It's a worthwhile hang. One Day on Netflix.
I'll have to check it out. I am a crier, so I'm worried about that. But if I can tell my wife, hey, let's watch this British romance show, I will win all of the points. But that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
I'm just going to keep it real simple here, Gerald. We live in the state of Texas, right? There's no modifiers needed. Like, Texas is superlative. It is over the top. It is big. It is bold. It is a lot of things. The state and the university, right? Anytime, we've often said this, that you add a modifier, you water it down, right? Texas Tech waters down Texas, which feels so much more powerful. Texas A&M, you can't just be Texas. You have to be a specific segment of the state of Texas, right? Anytime you add that extra, you are making it less powerful, making it more mild, just diluting the product. And Gerald, this week it came out specifically that the other folks in Texas have specifically been doing that. If you're nodding your head, you know the story. If not, let me tell you. The TAM 2 jalapeno pepper this week is, it's not a new thing, but it's been discovered and gone a bit viral, especially on college sports internet, but general internet, I think. TAM 2 is, of course, named after the TAMU, Texas A&M Fighting Aggies, who have genetically modified a pepper to take the spice out. Most of the jalapenos we are getting today, it's not that you've built up a tolerance and the spice affects you less. It's that the dang Aggies robs you of something good and delicious and beautiful. The heat of a jalapeno is as Texas as the, you know, a bowl of chili, an enchilada, you know, a chip and a salsa. It is institutional to our identity. And the fact that Texas A and mild, the fact that the Aggies have yet again come into something and made it worse for their being there, just reiterates why they are the worst people generally on the planet.
Worst people on the planet might be the people I'm about to talk about. Why are jalapenos more mild? I'm banging the drum this week on the NCAA video game and the reaction to Arch Manning opting out. So people on the internet continue to be dumb, and Arch Manning has officially opted out of the NCAA football game in an effort to not be a distraction and not be a talking point. His family used the standard line that they always say anytime he's asked about NIL, he's going to focus on football, and people took that and ran with it, turned it into a story. He is damned if he does and damned if he doesn't at this point with literally everything he does. But focusing on football is the standard line that the Manning family used when they talk about Arch and his NIL deals. They literally have done no NIL stuff. This is no different. And again, his efforts to not be a distraction. Certain writers and idiots on the internet who decided to get into my DMs, and I absolutely roasted them, decided to make it a story even in the event of them not trying to make it a story. So either way, Arch didn't need to be an NCAA, but doesn't do NIL deals outside of that one charity auction that was massive. But again, the Arch Madness. Arch moves numbers. Let's quit quote tweeting and dunk tweeting on people and just ignore it. And maybe, just maybe, the Arch Madness will subside.
One quick rejoinder, Gerald. I'll just say this. The coverage has been eerily similar as I've watched folks. I saw a Wemby take on the Rockets this week, but at the same time, conversations started on ESPN about, is Wemby ready to leave San Antonio because they're not winning? Like, The thing I hate about media, and Gerald and I have sat here and said protect journalism, whatever, but this national media discourse where they come in and a local reporter, for instance, in this case, San Antonio Express news reporter Mike Finger, who's excellent, says, no, that's not true. Wemby's very patient. He's great. He's thoughtful. The same way Texas reporters like, no, Arch isn't transferring, whatever. The way they turn stories, they pick a name that people know and turn non-stories into these larger things when local folks who have the actual story, you know, say, eh, this isn't really anything. It's a bit frustrating. I'll just leave it at that. More for another day.
And that's all we got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
You can follow me on Twitter at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook, Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week, hopefully at a more consistent time, hopefully a little bit easier to coordinate our schedules. But until then, thank you for listening, and hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Aggies still suck.